Sunday, June the 15th.
Welcome to this Burlington Audio Podcast. We hope you will be encouraged and inspired in your faith as you listen to this message. We'd love to hear what you think. Please be in touch with us through the website. More information and many more podcasts are all at burlingtonbaptist.org.uk. Thanks for listening.
We're going to think about the overflowing life. There is often a disconnect between the way the Bible talks about faith and Christian living and the way we often naturally think about it or demonstrate it or talk about it. In a sense, we're recovering from maybe way more than that, of kind of some religious constraint that's been put on our Christian faith. So something that was vibrant and life-giving was so often put in a box of rules and regulations, even rituals, not that those in themselves are necessarily bad. And we've turned it into something that it was never meant to be. When we look back at the scriptures and we look at it with kind of fresh eyes or soft eyes, or we allow ourselves to see in a new way, we discover that the dominant metaphor for living for God or the Christian faith or faith in Jesus, however you want to describe it, the dominant metaphor is a life that overflows. And we can see that in so many places in the scriptures. We're not going to go through those verses. If you're interested in them, just take a picture, take them with you into your week. But in every aspect, part of the scriptures, we see this reflection on a life that overflows. Overflowing with emotional presence, overflowing with gratitude, with generosity, with love, with provision, with life itself, that streams of living water would flow from within. There would be an overflowing of life from deep within us. So much so that the most celebrated psalm in the whole of the scriptures, the place where people have gone back to time and time again, usually at moments of deep sadness and darkness, even though I walk through the valley, the darkest valley, sometimes called the valley of the shadow of death, you can't get much darker than that valley, even though I walk through that darkest place, you are with me. And then the psalmist says, my cup overflows. That even in those places where it seems like life itself almost is hard to find, there is this invitation to experience, to know a cup that is overflowing. And as I prayed when we gathered at 9 o'clock this morning with the worship team and others involved in leading today, I prayed that God would give us faith to believe in a life that's overflowing. Because often, most of the time, I don't know about you, it's easier to have faith in my circumstances that don't feel overflowing-esque. Often, I think I hear, maybe you hear, the opposite of the overflowing life. Striving more than overflowing. The do more, do better, push harder, pull stronger kind of Christianity. Anyone been caught up in that? Anyone had a report that said you could do better? You could do better. Thanks very much. I feel thrilled to bits to take that report home to my parents. You could do better. The striving life that becomes marked by fearfulness, exhaustion, its effort, and the nagging sense that however much effort I put into it, it won't be enough. I don't have enough. So if striving is like carrying a bucket up to a well in order to scrape the last drop of water out of the well, overflowing is completely different. It's like a fountain. So we take the metaphor of it being a struggle and striving. I've got to scrape this last drop of water out of the bucket. type of living to the one where there might be a fountain that overflows from deep within us. Overflowing is not forced, it's freely given. It doesn't strive, it receives. Where striving grits its teeth, overflowing opens its hands. Where striving runs on fear, overflowing flows from grace. It's not passive, but peaceful. It's not lazy, but liberated. It's not the result of pushing harder, but the result of being filled fuller. The overflowing life, poured in, pouring out. You were never meant to hold it together. You were meant to be held. You were never meant to hold it together. You were meant to be held. Filled. Poured into. Pouring out. This is the overflowing life. And the thing about something that's overflowing is it's really hard to stop something that's overflowing. Normally your experience with something that's overflowing is that you want to stop it. Be it your bath, your kitchen, the dishwasher in the church here last week broke and it overflowed all over the kitchen and the task was to stop it. The water didn't have any problem overflowing. It just did its thing. The overflowing life doesn't have any problem overflowing. It just does its thing. It's powerful, like a river breaking its banks. It's effortless, like a spring bubbling over. So many metaphors, like a tree that doesn't squeeze the fruit out. It just naturally overflows with the fruit. Like a table is generous, like a fire is contagious, like a child is joyful, like waves are healing, like wind spirit-filled. It's all just kind of happens naturally and with a sense of ease. Now, if you've hung around Christians for a while, you might not always feel like there's a sense of ease. Sometimes we're trying to squeeze it out. Sometimes we're trying to make it happen. Sometimes we're pushing a little bit harder. If only I push a little bit harder, pray a little bit longer, read the Bible a little bit more. I'm not saying any of those things are bad things, but they put the focus on what we can do, and we can't do it. It's the wrong way round. The overflowing life. And that's what we're going to think about for the next 6 weeks. So if you're in for the pushing and striving kind of Christianity, then tune out for the next 6 weeks because it'll go against the grain. If you'd rather struggle a bit longer, then stick with that. But we're going to try and look at it a totally different way, which I think is more authentically biblical, with the life that God has for us flows in us and flows out of us, and there's a ease. Eugene Peterson captured it, didn't he, in his verse, "Come to me all who are weary and learn the what?" Can you remember what it says? The unforced rhythms of grace. That sounds pretty nice, doesn't it? The unforced rhythms of grace in our lives. So a few thoughts from our passage this morning as we think about the overflowing life. 2 Corinthians chapter 1 that Helen kindly read to us. And each week we're going to look at a bit of this letter called 2 Corinthians. The reason it's called 2 Corinthians is that it was the first. And for some reason it got muddled up. But nevertheless, we call it 2 Corinthians because it's the second one in the book. And this guy, Paul, he planted a church. He went to another place to plant some more churches. And he writes back to his churches. And so that's what the letters are in the scriptures. They're letters that he's sending back to this church that he planted. And he writes in 2 Corinthians particularly about the overflowing life. It's one of the dominant themes of the whole book. So we're going to dip into different sections of it through these next few weeks. And the passage that we have today is super appropriate for Father's Day and perhaps especially appropriate for a dedication service. I'm going to have another sip of water to try and clear the frog in my throat. It's a little embarrassing because you're all looking at me. So would you turn and talk to yourselves just for 1 minute and I'll be right back. Okay, so we're in 2 Corinthians and we're thinking about Father's Day. We're thinking about this wonderful dedication time that we've experienced. And Paul describes God as a father. And we all have particular images of what it might mean to be or to have a father. What kind of father does Paul describe? A stern father, a demanding father, an absent father, a passive father, or a providing father, or a fun father, a protective father, a tender father. When you think of fatherhood, what adjective, what descriptive word would you naturally insert before or after the word father? Based on all of our experiences of fathers that we've had, good and not so good, all that we've longed for them to be, all that they've been and all that they haven't been, and what we might think through the journey of faith that we've had about what kind of father God is. So what do we mean when we talk about God being a father? Paul sets the scene for us here as he begins to unpack what it means to have the life that overflows. And what Paul mentions about God the Father is something about fatherhood that I think all of us absolutely crave. We crave it however good and or poor our own fathering was. It's something that we long for deep in the way that we are made as human beings. What Paul says we need to know, if we're to step into the overflowing life, what Paul says we need to know is that the Father in heaven, Father God, is emotionally generous or emotionally present. Or emotionally available. Choose whichever phrase you want. It's the one thing that every child craves from their father and, of course, their mother. It's the emotion, it's the yearning behind every request. Come play with me. Watch me. Have you noticed that? Sometimes our kids decide that we're rubbish at playing and so they'll settle for just having us watch them. And how many of you will have had your children say, you're not looking at me? Because they're craving emotional presence, emotional connection. How many times have our children pulled on us and said, listen to me? I've wounded my kids the most probably by not always listening. Because what we crave is that emotional presence, that emotional connection. It's what it means to be human. When our kids say, help me, what are they really saying? They're saying, I want you to be there with me and for me and connected with me. God is emotionally present. When we look up to the heavens, he's not doom scrolling. When we look up to the heavens, he's not distracted by something else that might be more important. When we look up to the heavens, he's not disengaged, lost in his own whirlwind of unresolved emotions. He's there, present, available. It's the most incredible gift. This is one of the deepest secrets, I think, of understanding the overflowing life. That we know and connect with a God who is emotionally present and available to us. We talk about God being spiritually connected with him. Absolutely. Relational. Absolutely. But that emotional presence is a game changer. Here it is. Father of compassion and the God of all comfort who comforts us in all our troubles. He is there for me. Empathetic. Empathizing. Understanding. Comforting, communicating. So crucial is empathy because it's the currency of human connection. Let's think about the way God's created us to be. Human connection travels along the road of empathy. It is the currency, the money that we trade to connect with one another. That's why being vulnerable is so important. When you're vulnerable, you open up yourself to empathy. And it's that relational connection that brings us alive as human beings. It's the key to emotional intelligence, the pathway to renewal, healing, and so on. Kerry and I were in London last night for the book launch of Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister from a few years back, the female New Zealand Prime Minister, who is globally recognized for leading differently. This is quite terrifyingly scary. She's recognized because she led with empathy. Like, most leaders don't do that. But she determined to lead with empathetic connection. And people praised her the world over and still do, because she achieved incredible things because she made a connection with people. The currency that she led with was empathy, and that opened up all kinds of possibilities. Like the change in that, it's not a political point, it's just the way that it kind of moved people's hearts after the Christchurch massacre of 2019, when they changed the gun laws and 55,000 guns were handed back into the government. Why? Because there was an emotional connection. People changed their behavior because they heard from someone who they felt understood them and connected with them at an emotional level. She's got this wonderful quote, "You can be strong and you can be kind." That's parenting right there, isn't it? You can be strong and you can be kind. So where is God inviting you to become aware that he is emotionally present for you? He is emotionally present for you. You know, God is not just offering us a ticket to the next place. God is just not sorting out the stuff that's in the past. All of those things might be gloriously true. But right now, today, on the 15th of June, where is God inviting you to become aware that he is emotionally present for you? Do you remember the story of Jacob in the Old Testament? You have to feel sorry for him. He was having a bit of a rough time, and he has this dream, and then he wakes up, and after the dream, he realizes that God was there, and he hadn't realized it. And that's tragic, isn't it? And that's the tragedy that's lived out all over our world today, that God is emotionally present and available, and we are not aware of it. We are not aware of it. And if you think about the troubles in our world, we come to church today with heavy hearts, don't we? There are parts of our world that are tearing themselves apart, and it's a job to understand it intellectually. Why haven't people got more emotional resilience right now? Sure, have people been unbelievably hurt in all different kinds of ways? Has there been all kinds of injustices? Absolutely. Why haven't people got emotional resilience? Because they don't know the one who is emotionally present for them. Hello? That's the heart of what it is to pour out, to live an overflowing life. Where is God inviting you to become aware that he's emotionally present for you? Help me to receive your comfort would be a great prayer to pray this week. Often I want God to change the situation. Who knows what I'm talking about? And changing the situation usually means I want God to change somebody else. And we pray that prayer with a sense of earnestness. What if we just shifted things just for a little bit and began to pray, Lord, give me emotional comfort where this has hurt me. Give me emotional connection where this has wounded me. Help me to know and to trust you, not firstly for the change, but for your closeness, or for the closeness that you will offer. I think that would begin to be a game changer for us. You see, the spring that overflows doesn't worry about overflowing, but it does worry, but it does need to be kept connected to the source. We need to be connected with an emotionally available and present Father. We can be stubborn, we can be hurt, we can be angry, and we can distance ourselves from God for 1,000 reasons. But he invites us to know that he is emotionally there for us. So talk to God this week about where you need comfort. Maybe stop asking for change and start asking for comfort. We need a little bit of right brain and left brain. Left brain, things that we kind of think about and we rationalize. So if you want some left brain things to think about, here are two great verses to meditate on every day. Zechariah, the Lord will quieten you with his love and rejoice over you with singing. Allow God to do that for you this week. Meditate on what that might mean. Or Psalm 34, verse 18, God is close to those who are in church. What does it say? God is close to the brokenhearted. God is near to those who are crushed in spirit. The Father of the universe offers us emotional connection. In one of our kind of recent conversations, in fact, Vicky and I had this conversation quite recently, thinking about the way that hymns come alive when you understand who wrote them and why they wrote them and the circumstances that they wrote them. And Mauricio Spafford, a Christian businessman who wrote the song, the hymn that we sing, when sorrow like sea billows roll, it is well with my soul. And he wrote that after utter tragedy in his life. He also had lost his children at sea. And he comes to the point where he'd lost almost everything. He'd lost it, all his possessions in a fire. He'd lost most of his family. And he gets to this place in the middle of the Atlantic and he pens these words, not because he didn't have any pain or sorrow. So important to understand that. He talks about sorrow being like this, this waves of the sea sorrow billowing around his heart. And yet he said, it's well, because I knew God's presence with me there. Because I knew God's presence with me there. Where do you need to let God pour in comfort today? It's a heck of a job being a parent. You know that already, don't you? I mean, honestly, emotional resilience or what? They'll suck everything you've got, kids, won't they? Money, time, and emotional energy. Absolutely relentless. So we need to know where the resource is. We need to know what, where are we going to allow ourselves to be filled up? Life is just the same, isn't it? How many of you are skipping through life like it's a walk in the park or a little dance through the daisies? Life is emotionally demanding, sucks everything out of you. So you've got to know what's pouring in. And because God is emotionally generous to us, we can be emotionally generous to others. Emotionally available. What does it mean for me to be more emotionally available to my children? What does it mean for me to be more emotionally available to my spouse? What does it mean to be more emotionally available to that person, work, community, friends, neighbors? What does it mean for me to be empathetic, to be compassionate? To see, to think, to pause long enough to imagine what it's like to be in that person's shoes. What's it like when my child is pulling on my leg, wanting my attention, and I'm too distracted by all the important things? Like there are more important things. What does it feel like to that person who comes into the room and they're still on their own? What does it feel like to that person going through that scenario when, as Vicky so put it, just life just carries on, and yet for someone life has stopped? What is that? How do we step into that? Well, we need resources to do that. And I want you this week not to think about how do you step into it. I want you to think about how you resource yourself. Because honestly, what I've discovered is if you focus on resourcing yourself, you'll do the other stuff more naturally. But if you try to strive to do the other stuff, you'll be exhausted. And you'll come back next week and you'll feel more guilty and more of a failure because you've made it all about, this is what I'm trying to do harder. I'm trying to put more effort into this. And when was the last time that putting more effort in really helped? I mean, in some things, maybe. Those of you doing the physics exam tomorrow, let's have a shout. Who's doing physics tomorrow morning? Yeah, well, one of you. Just you, Baz. Yeah. So the physics person might say try harder, and there might be a little bit of truth in that, but generally in life, spoiler right here, trying harder doesn't usually work. Being filled with a fresh resource changes everything. So don't go away trying to work harder. That's back to the striving space. We can be emotionally generous too, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. And as we're thinking about overflowing, it's not that we need to, the spring doesn't need to be turned up, the tap doesn't need to be turned more on. We've got a God who is emotionally available. So the spring is very healthy, thank you very much. The tap of God's emotional resource is available to us. What we need to do is get the blockages out of the way. And that's what when something's overflowing, we try to stop it, don't we? And there are things in our lives that just act like blockages. The single thing we can do, I think, that's the most powerful way of unblocking a blockage so that what would naturally flow will flow is to be honest. Being honest opens up the flow. And Paul says this. He says, we were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. This was supposed to be the great man of faith. And he said, I was scared to death. He wasn't afraid to be honest about his reality. He wasn't afraid to say, I know I'm supposed to be the person who trusts in God, and I'm writing all these letters. He didn't know, did he? But I'm writing all these letters that will become part of the Bible. I'm supposed to be the one that have it all together. He said, do you know what? When that happened, I was scared out of my mind. Oh, that's encouraging. I was scared out of my mind. I despaired even for life itself. Honesty removes the boulders and allows the things to flow. Honesty, maybe, with God. Honesty can heal in deep ways. God can't heal the version of you you're pretending to be. Thank you. I thought that was good. I was pleased with that. God can't heal the version you're pretending to be. Honesty with God. Honesty with others. That the deepest thing you can do to your kids sometimes is to say that you're sorry. I've wept over the lack that I've been as a father. I've wept before them over the lack I've been as a father. It's the deepest thing to get the blockages out of the way. The honesty. Not pretending, but trusting. You see, whether you're a mom or a dad or a friend or whatever, no one needs us to be perfect. But they need us to be real. They need our presence, not our perfection. The overflowing life. To your friends, to your spouse. Where is it? Where a little bit of honesty will open up the flow from the God who pours into us that we might pour out to others. I'm going to lead us in just a short reflection. Perhaps the band would come. We'll have them ready so they don't disturb us with all their clanging and knocking around and plugging in and stuff. We'll let them do their thing and get ready. And we're just going to have a short reflection. You might like a bit of space if you're feeling like the person around you is a bit too close. It's hot in here and they're a bit sweaty. And they're breathing down your neck. Move to another place. You can move around. We're all chilled. They might be offended, but we won't be if you move from being next to them. And what I want us to do is to think about what it means for us to move from the striving place to the overflowing place. It's not I'm going to try harder, but I'm going to seek to be fuller. I'm going to go back to the source. I don't want to strive. I don't want to live wringing out effort, clutching for meaning. I don't want to be scraping the bottom of the bucket, hoping it's enough this time. I don't want to wake up exhausted from running a race I was never asked to win. I don't want to carry joy like a burden or love like a checklist. I don't want to carry love like a checklist. I don't want my love to be just a list of things that I ought to do. Because striving is fear in motion. It's the whisper that says you have to hold it all together. You have to earn it. You're only as good as your last success. But overflowing is different. Overflowing is the vine growing fruit through the branch, not by pressure, but by connection. It's grace that spills over the rim of a cup that was never supposed to hold this much. Overflowing is peace that doesn't apologize, joy that doesn't need proof, love that isn't limited to what I deserve. Overflowing doesn't strive. It stays close. It doesn't wrestle, it rests. It doesn't grasp, it receives. Father, I don't want to strive. I lay it down. I give it up. I want to overflow. I hear your invitation to a life that overflows, not because I've done enough, but because you are enough. Not because I'm holding it all together, but because you're holding me. So fill me again. I open up my heart to you. I open a door to another part by being honest. God of abundance, let your love rise like a wellspring. Let it pour in. Let it flood in. Let it overflow in me. May I be an overflowing parent, an overflowing spouse, an overflowing brother or sister, work colleague, partner or friend. Help me this week to concentrate so much more on your emotional presence with me and for me. That when I think about all those descriptions of what you're like, I discover that you're good through and through. Good through and through. Can trust you with it all, with the whole thing. Sometimes I think about fathers as being stern or demanding. Sometimes I think about them being absent or distracted. Sometimes I think about fathers as having all their own emotional stuff that they're trying to process, let alone having time for me. But you're so different. You're a good, good father. Emotionally generous. Emotionally available. And more than I can believe or imagine, I'm loved by you. I enjoy that. I appreciate that. I receive that in this moment.